Son of a bitch. This is Pure Decking for Thursday, January, July. I don't know what day it is. July the 5th, 2018. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and reminding you that yesterday was the last day that some still had 10 fingers. I'm Morps, and tonight we have a full crew. We have RU486.
Oh, wait.
Madman.
I still have 10 fingers, but there are far fewer frogs in One Piece.
Swap.
Not the gay frogs.
I also want to point out that today is also the day that some still have 10 fingers.
All right, Syntax, how many fingers have you collected?
Canada Day is, what, this week too, isn't it?
Tomorrow will also be a day which will be the last day that some will have 10 fingers.
We're going to blame that one on bandsaws.
I bet you there's thousands of fingers that are lost every day.
Syntax
is it true
has
it's
said,
the Canadian custom to build a little white house and then burn it down on Canada Day?
I've never done that custom.
Well, that sounds like fun.
In remembrance of the of War of 1812, are you?
Yes.
When I was a kid, we used to build an effigy of a witch out of sticks and straw and burn it.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
That's some weird Danish tradition. And then we cooked bannock.
All wicker man and shit.
So, all right. And Syntax, all right, how's that collection of fingers for your necklace going?
You know what? I still have all of my fingers, and I haven't actually collected any fingers yet this year. But I generally stay inside during the stupidness that is, especially because where I live, like people are like, oh, I don't have fireworks, but I saw my gun, so they just shoot that up.
Shoot
in,
the
like,
guns
straight up in the air.
Allahu Akbar.
Random times. Oh no, it's Odile Holmes.
They do know that those bullets have to come down eventually, right? I mean, Physics says they don't leave the atmosphere.
No, so okay, fun little anecdote. From 11:50 to 12:10. On New Year's Eve and New Year's morning, you know, so for that 20 minutes, the police department where I live are not allowed to get out of their car or leave a building unless it is an emergency.
So
because so many people shoot their guns straight up in the air that, like, people die here every year from that.
So I'm just going to throw out an article from a couple of years ago. Maine man did not mean to launch fireworks from his head that killed him, says friends. Apparently this guy held a mortar tube over his head, lit it, and it didn't explode correctly and killed him. So instead of going up in the air, it went off and basically blew his head off.
When it's got mortar written on the side, that's a general giveaway that this thing is going to blow up.
Yeah, according to local police, Staples 22 was messing around with friends in Calais, Maine, drinking and setting off fireworks when he put a mortar on his head and lit it. Mortars are cardboard tubes holding packaged fireworks, although it's unclear what type of firework was in the tube. The firework exploded, instantly killing Staples. So,
wait, his name is Staples?
Devin Staples.
Oh, okay, last name.
Python bucket.
I'll allow it.
His parents were hoping to get paid by the Staples office supply store when they Idiocracy much. Anyway,
right.
I'm thinking this guy should have won a Darwin Award.
Well, I spent the evening last night listening to the Chicago PD. That was some interesting listening.
I bet you that was
things
fun.
Certainly get a little exciting down there in Chicago. Yeah, on 4th of July.
Well, you could loan. I mean, you could fire guns all night during the 4th of July. Nobody'd really notice. So, I mean, you know, if you wanted to rob a liquor store and nobody noticed the gunshots going off, that'd be the time to do it.
It's we've been playing a drinking game. As soon as I get a call, shots fired, take a drink. Dude, I'm getting shit-faced listening to Chicago PD.
So, speaking of drinking games, tonight I'm actually finishing off a bottle of Apothic Red. I opened it up yesterday to go with the steak, so which actually this stuff pairs pretty nice with steak. What else is everybody else drinking? I don't know. Madman, what are you drinking? We didn't do that at the intro.
In Dos Equis, it goes well with the pizza that I'm eating.
Are you? You're probably still trying to suck down that coffee through a straw.
No, I hammered that coffee down, dude. I'm jittering like Michael J. Fox right now.
Suave, what are you drinking,
that's meant
man?
To be a long-form coffee.
Oh, no.
I am drinking Moosehead Lager.
Ooh, nice. What do you got, Syntax?
Yeah. So I'm drinking Tricanol 18 and eating a barbecue beef Hot Pocket.
Nice. Those are actually really good.
I know.
It's sad because it's like this is nothing but salt and MSG. But actually, those things are kind of – there's a lot of sugar in those too now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah.
But
and
don't forget the horse rectum.
Tricanol is – really good, especially if you like a good aged Irish.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's.
Wait a minute. We don't live in Sweden. Game? Everything that's labeled beef tests beef here.
Oh,
that's the UK.
It at least
they
has some content.
Horse meat.
What?
The Horse Meat Association of America is trying to actually get horse meat back on the menu.
Yep.
Wait, are you not
horse
allowed
meat
to
is
serve
not
more
bad.
Horse meat?
In certain states, horse meat is illegal due to them
really?
Killing. Yeah, it's because they don't want them killing horses.
But it's like
well, they want. They'd rather torture the horses by making them run around a little circle first.
It's a farm animal. You should be able to eat it.
I forget the argument that was made back when they decided that horse meat wasn't going to be on the American menu. And it was nothing to do with the actual horse meat. It was to do with the stature of the animal within the hierarchy of what you eat and what you don't eat sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was also, too, to protect the animal because the horse is considering the animal that won the West.
I also want to just throw out there that I'm also in favor of allowing people to eat dog.
Why not?
Yep. You can eat a cow, you can eat a dog.
So speaking of eating weird things, the article for discussion tonight's from Time. Uganda just rolled out a 5-cent daily tax to access social media. This is from the second. A new tax on social media. Hey, I'm just assuming people in Uganda eat weird things because it's Africa. I mean, I guess that's kind of racist or at least regionalist. I mean, bigoted, sure, but I'm not certain what kind of bigoted.
I don't know how it's bigoted.
No, I'm assuming they eat things that I think are
weird animals.
So, I mean, you know.
Depending on what part of Africa you're in, they still use dung in cooking fires. Not weird to know these things.
No.
Want to know what's flavoring your food.
That's actually just self-preservation, now that I think about it.
So. Yeah, they're eating bugs. Those are possibly delicious bugs.
So, anyways, a new tax on social media has taken effect in Uganda, angering many who see the revenue measure as an attack on free speech. The tax on users of sites such as Facebook was first proposed by longtime leader Yoweri Museveni, who complained of online gossip in a March letter that urged the finance ministry to raise money to cope with the consequences of online gossip. What are the consequences of online gossip? I mean, I guess technically Donald Trump could be. I mean, that's...
Here's why that's bad.
Yeah. In addition to the usual data fees, social media users must now pay an upfront daily levy of SHS 200, which is about 5 cents, to access social media websites. Daily level of, I mean, I'm assuming in Uganda that's a significant amount of money over time. Service providers, including regional telecommunications giant MTN, said in a joint statement Sunday that starting July 1, the levy would be charged on over-the-top services, including access to websites such as Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The tax will be deducted by service providers that will then pay the to the Government Revenue Service. Many Ugandans are bitter because the tax was brought in bad faith, said Ladislaus Rakafuski, a prominent human rights lawyer. I'm not intentionally mispronouncing these names. I'm just apparently poorly educated. The reason for it were anti-people, were anti-social, not development-oriented, he said Monday. Amnesty International urged Ugandan authorities to scrap the tax, calling it a clear attempt to undermine the right of freedom of expression in the East African country. By making people pay to use these platforms, this tax will render these avenues of communication inaccessible for low-income earners, robbing many of their right to freedom of expression, with a chilling effect on other human rights, the group's Joan Nakayuki said in a statement Monday. From the social media levy, the government hopes to collect about $400 billion, or about $100 million, in the current financial year. About 17 million of Ugandan's 41 million people are active internet users, according to government figures. This is not the first time the Ugandan government has taken actions widely seen as curbing social media use in the country. In February 2016, as Ugandans voted in a tight presidential election, officials blocked access to Facebook and Twitter, citing many unspecified security threats. That poll, won by Museveni, was marred by allegations of fraud and late delivery of voting materials in some opposition strongholds. Museveni, who took power by force in 1981 and remains a U.S. ally on regional security, could rule for nearly five decades after lawmakers passed a bill removing an age limit on the presidency. Museveni, who is 73, would have been ineligible to run again under a constitutional provision that prevented anyone 75 and above from holding the presidency. The jettison of the age barrier reinforced charges by opponents who say Museveni wants to rule for life. If he's 73 and he's been in power since 1981, it sounds like he basically already has.
I just want to throw this out there before we go on. Minimum wage for a Ugandan person per year is $95 US.
I looked even further into it here. Some of the lower earners earn about 600 shillings an hour. And they're charging them 200 shillings.
Oh, is that what SHS stands for? Is shillings?
Yeah. So I it looks like, you know, it's just over.
Yeah. See, poorly
like 20
educated.
Minutes of labor would pay for it at a low wage job.
The average income is 19,000 US. 19,154.
Oh, yeah, but you can't look at averages because...
Yeah, that doesn't work out,
man. That gets thrown off by the high earners.
Yeah.
Minimum pay that you have to get for a year's worth of work is $95.
Yeah, like a sales worker makes 589 shilling per hour.
Are you getting that off minimumwage.org?
Wageindicator.org.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's the one.
So there, you said...
Salary.com. I'm showing a salesman is $7,000 a year. Okay. Oh, that's their money.
Yeah,
2,100 US.
So 7,000 shillings and $200 a day to hit Facebook. So
wow.
I've got a couple of problems with this. One, that's horrible. Two, they're assuming that Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn are the only platforms where people can speak freely. I didn't see shit about IRC on this list.
VPN.
Yep.
Yeah, VPN definitely.
And even get a shitty free one at that point. Like, it doesn't matter if your shitty free VPN is, you know, logging what you're doing. You're going to Facebook. Like, they can't be like, oh, you have a VPN, you're going to the book face. No, fuck that. Just get a VPN. It's encrypted. Call it a day.
I'd say this is where, you know, doing things like standing up old school BBS servers on Telnet hosts. Or, well, maybe wrapping them in SSH, but, I mean, still.
IP over ham radio.
There you go. I actually mean to get into that at some point. It looks cool. It looks like there's some interesting shit floating around out there. I work with a guy who's into some of that stuff, and he says basically people do run BBS servers on it. So it's like, hello. It's like, that sounds like fun. maybe not terribly useful, but fun. So, yeah, that's so. Even though it's, you know, 5 cents a day sounds like something goofy over here, but yeah, Cycros is right. No encryption over ham. It's actually illegal to put encryption on ham.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
It's part of the license. No encryption. No. There's if you don't have certain versions, because there's three different levels of licensing. So if you don't have the licenses, you can't use certain bands or certain frequencies. But the basic technician's license is enough to do digital and fairly limited range. So I mean, I think you're getting, like, at this point it's like a one of those old Baofeng radios and stuff like that, and $30. So getting into it's not exactly difficult.
Hey, but you don't need a license to receive.
No, you don't.
So if you're just gonna lurk.
No, you don't. You're absolutely right. And that's where one of those little radios you can, I mean, those things are easy to set up as police scanners and shit like that anyways. So,
oh yeah.
So,
and honestly, we're talking about Uganda. Do you really think that anyone gives a damn about the ham radio license in Uganda? Do they even have a ham radio license in Uganda?
I'm pretty sure they'll just kick in your door and shoot you if you have a ham radio over there.
Well, yeah, I mean, and probably if they find out that you're using a VPN to circumvent their tax, they'll do the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean, I don't think you really want to fuck with the Ugandan authorities, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I mean, if you're alive and a Ugandan at this point, you're doing pretty well for yourself, considering the Civil War, the 1980s AIDS epidemic. Which they're doing pretty well with now. It used to be 30% of the population was HIV positive. Now they're down to 6.4% in 2008.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because there's no cure for AIDS, we know how those numbers are going down.
Oh, yeah. But there's no uptake in reinfection of newer people.
Well, that's
they
good.
They convinced a lot of people that it's not a cure to rape a virgin. That helped out a lot.
God!
You know, mass genocide and stuff really helps to thin the population as well.
It does.
This guy seems to be doing pretty well for Uganda. You know, he mightn't be the freest, most open guy, but it looks like life expectancy and that is creeping up.
Okay, this next story is stuck behind a paywall for me.
Oh, Washington Post. Yeah, I guess it would be.
I don't know, if countries have the right to tax something, they're not taxing speech. They're taxing your ability to pick up a newspaper. I have to pay sales tax on newspapers. I'm paying a tax on my internet bill right now to see Facebook.
You read a newspaper?
Well, it's not, but Madman, that tax is not specific to what you do with the internet. It's specific to accessing the internet in general. This is actually a different tax based on, your usage, your specific usage of the internet. Basically, what everybody who's complaining about the lack of net neutrality in the federal government anymore is afraid of is actually happening in Uganda.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So, and I think the net neutrality stuff in the States is pretty overblown, and I'd rather see it solved by having more ISPs, not, you know, regulation. But that this actually is the nightmare scenario for net neutrality, is that, oh, your specific individual usages are taxed. Like, imagine if you had to pay a $10 tax a year. A $10 tax a year because you wanted to play video games online. You know, you can call it a sin tax. I mean, you know, you'd have a lot of people upset about it, even though it's only $10 a year.
Yeah, but like when you look at the equivalents, so like a salesperson makes 600 shillings, so that's a third. So let's say, you know, here in Canada, it's minimum wage in a lot of places. What is it, like 10, 12 bucks? So it'd be like $3-4 a day.
Okay. So
that's over a year. What's that work out to? Somebody do the math for me, because I'm
so rounded up to about $100 a month. It's about $1,000
bucks a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you pay $1,000 a year tax to play video games?
No. No.
Probably not.
VPN.
Yeah. I mean, it is curbing speech by having a paywall. But I think on the scheme of things, Uganda, yeah. Not getting hunted down through tribal warriors or anything like that.
I mean, they are doing better. There is less of the hunting down by tribal warriors in Uganda right now.
Well, I haven't actually been to Uganda.
You know, it is actually an interesting point, though, that it might not be the most pressing concern if you're living in Uganda at the moment.
So. Yeah.
I mean, this seems an upper-middle-class problem.
You know, first-world problems.
A third-world country.
Yeah, whatever.
But it is specifically Twitter and Facebook. So there's already workarounds. Use any of the other Twitter replacements.
Yeah, what's the open-source one that everybody was using? Shoot. Not Diaspora.
It was like a dinosaur.
But you know what? That's exactly what's going to happen. One? All of a sudden, Uganda, there's going to be a new favorite social media site.
They'll just tax that one, too.
Well, I mean, it'll be cat and mouse at that point. It'll just be chasing
Mastodon.
It.
Yeah.
Mastodon, lines. That was it.
Mastodon. See, I knew it was like a dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, you'll just see people setting up Mastodon servers and making so many different ones that it becomes impossible to tax, so they'll just have to tax everybody on the internet. So, But
Diaspora?
Yeah, Diaspora is the Facebook replacement one, but that wasn't the one I was thinking.
Oh, God, they list Tumblr as an alternative? Tumblr is an alternative to nothing.
Sanity. Tumblr is an effective alternative to sanity.
If I wasn't pro-free speech, I would have to get rid of that. I'm not going to get rid of it, but I really want to.
Well, you know, free speech, not if it's not about things you despise, then you don't really
believe
it.
Not about things I like. It's about Tumblr. Luckily, that First Amendment exists, Tumblr.
All right, let's move on here. Next one is from the Washington Post and may or may not be behind a paywall. Did not seem to be for me, but apparently it is for Syntax. Wellington, New Zealand. Flamboyant internet. Is that really the word you want to use to describe Ken.com? Flamboyant?
Yes. Flamboyant.
Okay. Fair enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no. Is he wearing a zoot suit? He needs to be wearing a zoot suit to be called flamboyant.
Well, he's got a scarf.
Oh, no. I thought that was it looked like a warlock's robe with a hood.
Well, I wouldn't put that past
him
either.
No, that's a full-on scarf. You can see the tassels.
Is it really?
Yeah, there's tassels.
Is it a scarf or a cravat?
No, it's a scarf.
I don't see a fedora on his head, so, I mean, you know.
He's
gained weight.
Did you tell?
Has he become white? I thought Kim.com was an Asian dude.
No, he's white. He's always been white.
Okay. Yeah.
So he's always been a heavy white guy.
Did you just assume his race?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Based on Kim, and I thought that was his last name.
No, his last name's .com. He legally changed it back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, hang on. Dot would be his middle name. Com would be his last name.
Yeah.
Mr. Com.
No, isn't .com his last name?
It is.
Damn, he's got a
They used to always
wife.
Call him by what his last name was before he changed it in these articles, too.
Well, yeah, he has a smoking wife because he made a fuck ton of money.
Yo.
Yeah, he did Mega Upload, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
God, I miss Mega Upload.
Yeah, the new Mega just is not a replacement because all it really does is hassle you to install its desktop app.
Who fucked him over? Was it NSA or FBI?
Oh, yes. Let's see.
Yes.
Because they still have a terabyte of my files. And when they seized his shit.
Yeah, we'd like our IHN episodes back, guys. I mean, come on.
That'd be great.
They're not illegal either. We own them.
Weren't they Creative Commons? I don't remember with the IHN. Was IHN Creative Commons?
Oh, there's been plenty of people who've tried suing the American government over their lost files.
IHN is created and made in America, right? And it's stored in America. That way it's protected by free speech.
Stored in America by the NSA because they made backups. Anyways, so flamboyant internet.
At least someone was making backups of them.
Yeah. Oh, for the record, Galaxy 15, Pure Decking anyways. I can't speak for everything on Galaxy 15, but Pure Decking is Creative Commons. I don't care what you all do with it. So let's see. I think I had it at the bottom of the webpage for a long time, too. Flamboyant internet entrepreneur Kim.com and three of his former colleagues have lost their latest bid to avoid extradition to the U.S. to face criminal charges. Oh, Psychro says he's German. New Zealand's Court of Appeal on Thursday upheld earlier court rulings that found the men were eligible to be handed over to U.S. authorities. .com's lawyer Ira Rothkin said they were disappointed with the judgment and plan to file an appeal in New Zealand's Supreme Court. We have now been to three courts, each with a different legal analysis, Rokin wrote on Twitter. The latest decision comes more than 6 years after U.S. authorities shut down .com's file-sharing website, Mega Upload, and filed charges of conspiracy, racketeering, and money laundering against the men. If found guilty, the men could face decades in prison. Mega Upload was one of the internet's most popular sites. U.S. prosecutors say it raked in at least $175 million, mainly from people using it to illegally download songs, television shows, and movies. .com argues he cannot be held responsible for others who chose to use his site for illegal purposes, and that any case against him should have been heard in civil court. Well, copyright law is civil law, isn't it?
It is.
He says he never lived in the U.S. or even visited the country and doesn't have a company there. Born in Germany as Kim Schmitz, .com founded Mega Upload in 2005. At one point, he lived in a Hong Kong hotel before being granted permanent residency in New Zealand in 2010. He was arrested in New Zealand in 2012 during a dramatic police raid on his mansion and incarcerated for a month before being released on bail. Since then, .com has released a music album, started another internet filing sharing company called Mega, and launched a political party, which unsuccessfully contested the nation's 2014 election. In addition to .com, who founded Mega Upload and was its biggest shareholder, the U.S. is also seeking to extradite former Mega Upload officers Marthas Ortmann, Bram van der Kolk, and Finn Batato. Kolk, isn't that how
really
you say that? It's German, and it's K-O-L-K? Der Kolk? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, van der
Kolk. Is proof that you're not racist, Morbs.
Yeah,
you're
can't
butchering
say,
white people's names too.
I can't say any foreigners' names. I'm American. I'm sorry.
he's is his real name really Kimmy Schmidt?
Mm-hmm.
Like really? No. Oh.
Yeah, name used to be Schmidt. He legally changed it to .com.
Well, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wow, he has movies after him.
Yeah, dude. The FBI actually went to New Zealand and raided him.
Yeah.
They had no jurisdiction.
I just noticed something at the bottom of this article. Copyright 2018 Associated Press. This material may not be published, broadcast, rewritten, or redistributed. Oh.
Oops.
What?
It says it may not be broadcast.
It's in.
Wait a minute.
In the public domain.
Sorry, guys. Gonna have to delete the.
Technically, this isn't broadcast. This is a fair use of.
I may have copy-pasted this article into the chat.
Yeah, we'll have to kill the TeamSpeak server. Damn it, Suave.
Burn it down. Burn the whole thing down. That's it.
No, seriously, you can read news articles. It's fair use. Because we're discussing them.
So. We're not charging anyone for this.
So I don't know how they can enforce that. So anyways, whatever. I mean, hell, I'm not even giving attribution to where we got it from.
Psychros in chat agrees with me.
Yeah, he does. Burn it down. He's in there like four times now, which is strange. Normally, he's only in there twice. But, I mean, hell, if Europe gets their way, you know, using news articles, or even linking to news articles in any way, shape, or form will be, you know, copyright infringement, so whatever. But
Rule 13 and Rule 9. Yep, good luck, Europe.
So, moving on. This next one is from ZDNet.com. and is, you know, good argument for what I have in Digital Dojo later. German police raid, it's from ZDNet, German police raid homes of Tor-linked group's board members. One board member described the police justification for the raids as tenuous link between the group's privacy group, a blog, and its email address. In the early morning on June 20th, German security services raided the homes of several board members of Zimbelfrund, a nonprofit group that helped to support privacy and anonymity projects. Mortis Bartel in Augsburg, Jens Kubiel in Jena, and Juris Werte in Berlin were raided, as was the home of a former board member who still had access to the board's bank accounts. The former board member arrived home from a business trip to find his locks had been changed. He was told to collect his new keys from the police department. Fuck! That'd suck. You just get home and the police have changed your locks for you.
Did they use, like the really good, like, Abloy?
You know they didn't.
Oh. I'm like, hey, if you get
you could get.
If you get a lock upgrade.
So why did they fuck over his house?
The coordinated raid took place after Kyler Storten, a left-wing blog, which translates to riot tourists, had called for protest action around the annual convention of the right-wing Alternative for Germany party, the largest opposition party in the German parliament. Law enforcement believed that the protest could get violent, according to Bartel. The raids were the latest in a series of intrusions by law enforcement into a community built around protecting its privacy, which was not only likely to drive a greater wedge between the privacy conscious and the authorities, but may result in a chilling effect on those whose identities were compromised. Police obtained a warrant to seize communications from Zimbelfrund related to the blog and the email address hosted by Rise Up, a privacy-focused email service. Zimbelfrund, an organization under TorServers.net, a network of organizations that run high bandwidth services for the Tor Anonymity Network, handles European bank donations for Rise Up, which the collective used to pay for the Tor exit infrastructure and software development, but not email infrastructure. Police did not comment to Der Spiegel, which was the first of the news. Bartel said the police justified the raids over a tenuous link between Zimbelfrund, Rise Up, and the blog. He says that the only other connection is that he lives in the city where the convention took place. You live here. We're raiding your house. God.
Well, did he post on the blog? And when he was posting on the blog, did he say, "Hey guys, I've got the Molotovs. We'll meet up at I don't know Hitler and the Third Reich Avenue. I don't know German city street names, but whatever corner of place, and then go burn some right wings."
It sounds like
because at that point it's conspiracy, and they do have a reason to go after it.
No, this sounds more like they were going after these people because they were part of the infrastructure that was running a blog calling for that shit. So these guys were running Tor servers and some financial services.
My question is though, like, it doesn't say any of these guys were arrested. It just says their homes were raided.
Yeah.
So yeah. It kind of just sounds to me more like the cops are after whoever wrote this blog, and they are just, like, gathering evidence.
They have business records.
Against these people.
Yeah,
and these people happen to be taking, handling the donations for them, so clearly they have financial records.
Yeah. We have nothing to do
with... It sounds more like they just, like, probably showed up with the warrant and are like, "Hey, can we have your financial records?" Or whatever. I don't know. Like, what all did they take? Did they actually go into any detail on
that? Let me keep going here. We have nothing to do with the blog they were after, said Bartel. We don't have anything to do with Rise Up's email infrastructure. The material seized include bank statements, donor information from Zimbelfrund's inception in 2011 that it painstakingly documented on paper receipts, and the identities of people active in partner projects like Tor and Tails, the privacy-focused operating system. Because the Tail project tries hard to protect the identities of its members, Zimbelfrund kept information out of any electronic documentation, but under pressure from tax authorities, the organization had compiled paper receipts with names and passport numbers of those the project had reimbursed. Bartel said those records have been compromised, putting the identities of those involved at risk. Oh, man.
Wait, does this guy have ties with Tails?
Yes. Their organization helps fund it.
Fucking burn it down.
There's a long history of people using that kind of disk data to investigate social structures, who's working where and who's involved in which projects, so we have to assume they are looking into the social networks of people, said Bartle. Board members published a statement Wednesday explaining what data was seized. Based on his interaction with police officers who raided his home, Bartle believed that the police knew that Zelbel Frood was not affiliated with Rise Up's infrastructure, and that Rise Up had nothing to do with the blog. The police did not ask the Seattle-based Rise Up for information or attempt to seize its equipment, he said. Bartle said that no Tor infrastructure was compromised because electronic storage equipment seized was encrypted. But it's highly unlikely, and because it's highly unlikely the police will be able to crack the smart cards. We consider our email infrastructure, our web infrastructure, and the Tor relays that we run still safe, said Bartle. Out of an abundance of caution, the organization revoked its PGP key and will be replacing keys and phrases over time. That said, the coordinated raids had other repercussions. In addition to searching people's homes, the police spent 8 hours collecting information from Zelbel Frood's registered address, a lawyer's office, seizing all of their electronic communications. Police had another warrant to search the law office itself, and even though they only handed Zelbel Frood's postal mail, it did not represent the organization. They had just a slim folder and a bunch of emails, Bartle said, unclear as to why the police spent 8 hours there. Because this affected their reputation, the law office told Bartle's lawyer that it'd like the organization to find a new registered office to partner with. If Zelbel Frood can't find a different registered office and mail forward location in Dresden, it may have to switch to a different tax authority, although that they have had a good relationship with the tax authority in Dresden. So the article goes on, but basically they got raided by the police over what sounds like a fairly tenuous link to a blog, and now their infrastructure's in shambles because all the legal people they were working with are like, nope, if this shit's going down, we're out. So,
wow, they ended up raiding a hackerspace as well.
Yep.
So who's Rise Up? That's what I want to know.
That's one of these groups that stands up a couple of different blogs. They call for action and protests and shit like that.
Okay. I wonder what specific incidents is triggered this, or is it just...
It said back at the beginning of the article, I think.
It seems Rise Up does similar tactics to Antifa.
Yeah.
But this group, from rereading the article, I believe all this group had to do with Rise Up is they helped collect donations, or they helped process donations. So it's kind of like going after PayPal, because PayPal had up an Antifa site, or collecting money for Antifa. Let me reread you know, this.
It really sounds like the kind of situation where a simple records request would have been sufficient. But at the same time, I guess maybe they figured, oh, because this is an organization dedicated to privacy, they may take steps to eliminate those records.
And the
that's
only
probably why
paper.
They went for the full-on raid, because they wanted to ensure they were going
to
get
that, or they were hoping to... They're like, well, this is one of these big internet privacy rings and Tor sites. Maybe we can find something else on these guys while we're there.
That, I think, would be way more likely that they had this thinly veiled, oh, these guys are kind of doing this thing that's a little maybe sketchy. So it gave them the probable cause, if it were here in the States, but it gave them that so that they could bust a door down and rifle through shit. And luckily, these guys' OPSEC was really good and they had everything encrypted. And yeah, they kept some paper records that they probably shouldn't have. But, you know, they did way better than, say, Kevin Mitnick or some of these other, you know, hell, Kim.com. You know, so yeah, like I mean, it's probably best case scenario what happened, you know, that they didn't, you know, that they were out and things were shut down and locked down and encrypted, so they didn't get, you know, royally screwed by the German government.
I just think the whole article is interesting. I mean, it's like you've got this group that's mainly involved in Tor and Tails and anonymity services getting raided over they found some tenuous links to a blog that was calling for protests. And, you know, they didn't get much. They kept a handful of paper records for tax purposes, and they were doing everything through a handful of law offices. And like I said, I feel like this was phishing. I feel like they were looking for something else.
You know, maybe like there's money laundering involved.
Oh, that could be.
It sounds like a shell game. That's what it sounds like.
I'm sure as soon as they got a chance, like, you know, people who are really into the privacy game, like, very often there's reasons for that. And I'm sure they couldn't wait to get their hands on all as much data as they could, especially when it comes to financial transactions.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they honestly were just looking into a lead for this, you know, protest group. I don't know. But, I mean, the whole thing's weird.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if this was the protest group's sole method of funding, because that's the only link. They weren't handling the blog, and they weren't posting on it, so it's not like they were part of a conspiracy on the blog.
It reads like the government thought they were doing email services for this group, even though they claim they weren't. So I don't know. I don't know enough of the details about it. I just have a really long article here that's kind of interesting, and I just kind of wanted to point it out and throw it out to the group and be like, what do you guys think? I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of wondering if Syntax is right. Maybe don't trust Tails now because it's been compromised. I mean, you get the right people, you can shut shit down. That's probably what happened to TrueCrypt, was that the guy running it probably got found out by some government agency who scared the shit out of him.
Yeah. And I mean, that for most of the government, you know, governmental agencies, you know, like Tails and Tor are a huge pain in their dick. You know, it makes it so hard for them to conduct business. You know, I put big air quotes around all of that. That they would really, like, that would be a grand slam if they could compromise Tails and you know, be able to make it not as privacy focused. You know, if they could put a backdoor into it, if they could do something there. And Germany definitely talks with the United States and with England and
oh, sure.
Basically,
Five Eyes.
Oh yeah,
Five
basically
Eyes, man.
Everybody. So if Germany breaks Tails is, and then, you know, they will, you know, they'll give it to the NSA and the CIA, and they'll give it to MI5 and just everybody, and it'll be dead. If they have found a way to compromise Tails, they've then burn it down. Like, I'm not going to update the version of Tails I have, because more likely that'll be how they break it, I think, would be with an update.
I don't know. I've always liked Hunix better anyways, personally. So,
yeah. And that's a really good. I just haven't played with it yet.
It takes a little bit more work to set it up, but it's like we were talking about earlier, that, you know, how I kind of prefer to work in VMs. But
yeah,
because that one's all VM, and some VM networking force it so that there's no way to break the Tor tunnel from the endpoint. But anyways, so I don't know. I don't know what's going to come of this. If anything, maybe they're just harassing the people running the Tor network. So, and maybe it's blown up out of nothing. Maybe the police really had something important to look into, and the article just doesn't make it clear. There's not enough information here. So I really don't know. It's just something to keep an eye on.
I'm going to call this bad reporting.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point. Next article. Go ahead.
Very well could be that. I said it very well could be that.
Okay. Next article is from TheVindicator.com. Somewhere in paragraphs 27 through 31 of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote something that Facebook finds offensive. I turned off the controller a minute ago. Oh, hang on. We can get that right. We can get it right. Where's my sound effect? There you go. Leading up to Independence Day, the Vindicator changed or challenged its Facebook followers to read the entire Declaration of Independence. To make it a little easier to digest that short but formidable historical document, the newspaper broke the Declaration down into 12 small bites and one to post each morning from June 24th to July the 4th. The first 9 parts posted as scheduled, but part 10, consisting of paragraphs 27 through 31 of the Declaration, did not appear. Instead, the Vindicator received a notice from Facebook stating that the post goes against our standards of hate speech. I read that wrong. Standards on hate speech. Standards of hate speech. You must be at least this racist to post on... Sometimes.
Yeah.
Facebook's notice then asked the Vindicator to review the contents of its page and remove anything that does not comply with Facebook's policies. And they actually have copied into the article here the stanzas. It's from the part of the Declaration where they're listing out the reasons that they're...
The grievances.
Yeah, the grievances. So it's probably the part about savage Indians.
Yeah, what it says Indian savages...
Yeah, so the exact stanza is, he has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of on our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. While the Vindicator cannot be certain exactly what triggered Facebook's filtering program, the editor suspects it was most likely the phrase Indian savages. Perhaps had Thomas Jefferson written it as Native Americans at a challenging stage of cultural development, that would have been better.
Oh, fuck me. That is brilliant.
Unfortunately, Jefferson...
I bet you that wouldn't have triggered their keyword filter.
Unfortunately, Jefferson, like most British colonists of his day, did not hold an entirely friendly view of Native Americans.
No, because they killed everyone, men, women, and children. That is why they were savage warriors.
So the rest of the article talks...
To be fair, we killed 90% of them first.
It's not exactly great history.
It's a very dark time.
I mean, if you're going to go fucking hard.
If you're going to be the bitch, be the whole bitch. Anyways.
Don't be like, oh, I'm sorry. You're a woman. You're a child. Nah. Like, go hard.
So anyways... the rest of the article goes on talking about how this was not somebody at Facebook blocking it. This was something automated. And that if somebody was actually manually reviewing it, they would have realized they're quoting a historical document and wouldn't have said anything about it. But
so can I rant here for just a second?
There's one thing I have to do, and that's at the beginning of the article, there's an update that apparently on July the 3rd, they actually write, the good folks at Facebook restored the post. So somebody at Facebook reviewed it, figured out they were quoting it and quoting the declaration and put it back up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So there are so many fucking people on the Book of Faces or the Twitter or the Instagram or whatever fucking insert social media here that they're like, who like reported me? I got a ban. Blah, blah, blah. It's like I get so sick and tired of being like, no one actually reported you. This is all machine learning. Like this is all an algorithm that's being run, and they're like, no, someone reported me. It's like, no, that's not how this fucking works.
They're trying to suppress my voice.
Yeah, it's like, do you know how many people they would have to have on staff to go through every fucking post? And not only that, it's like the Google image people, like the people that Google hired to do the initial review of Google image search. Like, those people were fucking traumatized.
Well, we did the article about the guys at Microsoft who, and I started reading it, I think it was an SJW thing, completely misreading the tone of the article when I had skimmed it previously. And then you can go back and listen to that show, I don't remember which one it was, but we're talking about the guys at Microsoft who do have to do content reviews. And you can tell I go from thinking this is hilarious to like, oh my God.
They're fucked up shit. But Facebook isn't going to hire people to, just review your stupid, booby pictures. Like, no, it's all done by a machine. It's all an algorithm. Like, you're not that fucking important. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, but they did hire somebody with biases to write that algorithm. And the algorithm is probably biased the same way that person was.
Well, I imagine. Oh, yeah. So the way that most of these things work is they have their algorithm is breaking up the post into phrases and then comparing those phrases against a database. All it's doing is looking for, does this combination of words exist? If it does, it's most likely, you know, a hate speech or not, you know. And this is why certain words will just get your post banned, you know.
It's if
plundered
then.
Our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people.
Yeah, some combination in there has tripped a natural language algorithm to thinking it's hate speech, right? So
yeah. Well, and then, so there have been people who have been talking about video games. And in fact, I remember seeing a thing on, I think it was like Civ 6 or Civ 7, where these people were talking about this epic game of Civilization they were playing, and it got like everyone involved post-ban because it tripped every algorithm possible.
Because they're talking about a video game. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Gandhi nuked us and, banned. Fuck.
Yeah, done.
It's like, no, that's a joke that happens in that game because of a bug in the first version. Come on, guys.
Yeah, because Gandhi's a dick.
No, it's because in the first version of the game, Gandhi's aggressiveness was set as, you know, at like one. And then some action when you hit a certain place, which caused everyone's aggressiveness to go down a certain level of development, I think it was what it was. They forgot to check and see if it was going to go negative or not. And because they're not using negative numbers, it flipped his aggressiveness from like one to something that should be like negative two, but instead is like, you know, 32 million or 32,000. So suddenly he goes from nothing to the most aggressive asshole in the game. They thought it was funny and left it in. It's sort of like the police in the original Grand Theft Auto. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like those ladies who are in those super abusive relationships, and after 20 years they snap, and then you see them like parading down the street with their ex-abusive lover's entrails, like as a, you know, as a headdress. Like,
Syntax, your town sounds way more interesting than mine.
You guys do know Gandhi served in the British military and volunteered to wipe out all the black people in Africa, right? He wasn't as much of a pacifist as people give him credit for.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like I said.
No, I didn't know that. Shit. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude was racist.
Dude really did not like black people.
He volunteered to lead the army to wipe them off the face of the planet. And commanded people. He didn't actually commit genocide, thanks to the crown, but it was within his purview to do so.
There's a reason they don't teach history anymore, Morps.
It's because it's awesome. No, don't get me wrong, he did start saying some peacefully stuff and fucked his niece, but...
Died wearing a diaper.
Died wearing a diaper.
And I think even Einstein was quoted crazy racist quotes. But, you know, like, that was the times, man. Like, fucking everybody was racist back then.
But yeah, I can see Gandhi flipping his shit being historically accurate in Civ.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess really in order to make that correct, he would only have to, like, he would have to start off with nuking Africa.
Yeah, and then he would go down to super passive. He didn't have a problem with white people.
Well, no, because then other people would be like, whoa, hey, that was fucked up. And he would be like, oh, you're in cahoots with them. Nah, that's it. Like I said, you take enough abuse over so long and you're going to snap. And he just does.
All right. So I forgot the point of that article.
Honestly, Facebook it was kind of banning, a non-article. Yeah. Like, it was like, oh, surprise, keyword filter picked up some keywords.
Yeah, a machine did exactly what it was programmed to do, film at 11.
I want to upload the full Star Spangled Banner.
Oh my god.
The second part of that song is wonderfully brutal and violent.
Well, yes, I'm sure after this hit the news, they're like, oh, hey guys, we should probably go get all these fucking historical songs and documents added to the filter.
Start whitelisting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, it looks bad, especially before July 4th.
Yeah, it's like the French national anthem. Like, put that into Google Translate and just giggle. Like, they talk about the blood of their enemies watering their fields.
I thought they talked about surrendering croissants.
No, because the French were actually pretty hardcore during their revolution. It was just after that that they were like, oh.
Which revolution?
No, no. They had an Italian that was hardcore during the revolution.
Wait, were we talking about the revolution of the uprising or the revolution where they started lopping heads off? Or
yeah.
The revolution? Which one?
I think the one where they started lopping heads off. The last second. One that they had.
Yeah, the yeah. second one.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is the French aren't nice people.
Since there weren't no. time between those, it was one revolution that just killed itself.
Well, dude, when the masses who are oppressed rise up against those who are oppressing them, and then they become the masters and are oppressing people. Oh, and we just keep going like until somebody goes, hang on a minute, won't be any French people left if we keep doing this. Maybe we should stop lopping heads off and get together and have a chat.
And we'll elect a Sicilian emperor.
Anyway,
and then they went back to a bloody emperor.
Let's move on to the next article here. It's from Gizmodo. It's the smartphone conspiracy that just won't go away. Many, many people are convinced that their phones are listening to their conversations to target them with ads. Vice recently fueled the paranoia with an article that declared your phone is listening and it's not paranoia.
It is listening. It might not be listening for ads, but if I say, Siri, scratch my balls, it has to be listening to know it can't scratch my balls.
Yeah, and it'll come up, I don't think that's very nice, or whatever the thing it says when you say something dirty to Siri is. It had a whole
Siri.
set of responses at one point, because we sat there and said the worst shit we could think of to it, trying to get it to get mad, really, is what we wanted, but it didn't happen, obviously. So,
am I the only one that has the Gizmodo ad on the side that says, did something massive smash into Uranus?
No, I saw that one too.
Okay.
We just, you know, Psychros, I figured that one was for you. Anyways, I lost my train of thought now. Your phone is listening and it's not paranoia. A conclusion that the author has reached based on a five. We went off the rails hard here, didn't we? Suave, you should be reading the articles and we need to change the title of this episode. A conclusion the author reached based on a 5-day experiment where he talked about going back to uni and needing cheap shirts in front of his phone and then saw ads for shirts in university classes on Facebook. Some computer science academics at the Northeastern University had heard enough people talking about this technological myth that they decided to do a rigorous study to tackle it. For the last year, Ellen Pan, Jingling Ren, Martina Lindorfer, Christo Wilson, and David Schaffness ran an experiment involving more than 17,000 of the most popular apps on Android to find out whether any of them were secretly using the phone's microphone to capture audio. The apps include those that belong to Facebook, as well as over 8,000 apps that send information to Facebook. Sorry, conspiracy theorists, they found no evidence of an app unexpectedly activating the microphone or sending audio out when not prompted to do so. Like good scientists, they refuse to say that their study definitively proves that your phone isn't secretly listening to you, but they didn't find a single instance of it happening. Instead, they discovered a different disturbing practice. Apps recording a phone's screen and sending that information out to third parties. So, nope, we didn't find any apps listening to you, but we found them taking screenshots of the 17,260 apps that the researchers looked at. Over 9,000 had permission to... It's
really?
Over 9,000! had permission to access the camera and microphone, and thus the potential to overhear the owners talking about their need for a cat litter or how much they love a certain brand of gelato. Using 10 Android phones, the researchers used an automated program to interact with each of these apps and then analyze the traffic generated. A limitation of the study is that the automated phone users couldn't do things humans could, like creating usernames and passwords to sign into an account on the app. They were looking specifically for any media files that were sent, particularly when they were sent to an unexpected party. The strange practice they started to see was that screenshots and video recordings of what people were doing in apps were being sent to third-party domains. For example, when one of the phones used an app from GoPuff, a delivery startup for people who have sudden cravings for junk food, the... You want to bet that was a paid placement right there in this?
Yeah, it sounded like it.
Yeah. The interaction with the app was recorded and then sent to a domain affiliated with Apps First, a mobile analytics company. The video included a screen where you could enter personal information, in this case their zip code. Wasn't a total surprise. AppC proudly touts its ability to record what users are doing in an app on its website. What bothered the researchers is that it wasn't evident to the user that their behavior was being recorded, something which wasn't disclosed in their privacy in the GoPuff privacy policy. After the researchers contacted GoPuff, it added a disclosure to the policy acknowledging that AppC might receive users' PII. It also added, added precaution, we're also pulling AppC SDK from the latest Android and iOS builds, said the startup spokesperson by email. In other words, you got caught. AppC claims
got caught, and then Google smacked your hand.
Yeah, pretty much. AppC meanwhile claimed that GoPuff screwed up. AppC CEO Zahi Boussibia told me that his company's terms of service clearly state that our customers must disclose the use of a third-party technology, and our terms forbid customers from tracking any personal data with AppC. He said their customers can blacklist sensitive parts of their app to prevent AppC from recording it, and pointed out that a number of AppC competitors also offer full-session replay technology for both iOS and Android. And skipping to the end of the article, Google pulled a bunch of these apps, or at least reached out to authors. So... yeah. So the researchers couldn't find the microphones getting turned on, but they found these apps recording video and taking screenshots.
So there's a picture from the last meetup that I think should be the background of everyone's phone for about a week.
Is that the one with everybody's face covered?
That or the one of my butt.
Oh, okay.
So I should be surprised, like, we all should be surprised at this, but we're not.
Yeah.
Like, what does that say about us as a society, even?
Honestly, the whole time that article was being read, all I could think of was, well, okay, that just means that those 10 phones didn't have audio being recorded.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking, exactly. If you have the personal assistant on, it has to be listening to you, recording what you're saying and sending it to a server to find out what the hell you're saying.
Oh, yeah. That's why I have the personal assistant turned right the fuck off.
I'm just sitting here thinking, and it's a brave new world.
Yeah, right?
Okay. So, moving on. Nobody else... Syntax got it, at least. Or everybody else. Everybody yeah. got it, and just nobody thought it was funny. Anyways, let's see. Next one up is...
Everyone likes a soft tyranny. Was that something you were going for?
Sure, why not? Okay. Apparently, this one is from the blog of Robert Heaton. The stylish browser extension steals your internet history. Before it became a covert surveillance tool disguised as an outstanding browser extension, stylish really was an outstanding... It was an outstanding browser extension. It bestowed upon its users nothing less than the power to change the appearance of the internet. Its extensive bank of user-made skins gave bright websites a dark background, undid disliked UI changes, and added manga pictures to everything that wasn't a manga picture already. Don't know that that's as useful as you think. The author spent many wonderful hours in its simple CSS editor, hiding the distracting parts of the web, while unknowingly being spied on. Facebook news feed gone. Twitter news feed gone. Personal browsing history gone. Quality of life and unexpected UI up and down, respectively. So, unfortunately, since January of 2017, Stylish has been augmented with bonus spyware that records every website that that anyone who uses it goes to. And apparently the Chrome version has had tracking the Firefox only had it since March of 2018. Stylish sends the complete browsing history back to its servers together with a unique identifier. This allows its new owner, SimilarWeb, to collect all of an individual's actions into a single profile. And for users like the author who have created a Stylish account on userstylish.org, this unique identifier can easily be linked to a login cookie. This means that not only does SimilarWeb own a copy of the user's complete browsing histories, but they also own enough other data to theoretically tie these histories to email addresses and real-world identities. So they go on talking about why this is bad. I don't think I need to explain why it's bad that a web browsing extension was copying your entire browsing history and sending it to an advertising company. So,
are we sure that they're sending it to an advertising company?
The company that bought out the app, and they were building profiles based on end users. So,
okay.
What else would you do with that? I mean, blackmail, obviously, but...
Oh, yeah, I'm like, there's all sorts of crime that could be done with that.
So, all right, and finally, to wrap up the news tonight, we have an article from Science Alert. How to be certain you're not living inside of a computer simulation? Spoiler alert, you can't be. So, oh, there's all kinds of shit in this article. It's a fun read. It's out there, but it's a fun read. Consider this right now. You are not where you think you are. That's the wrong button. Okay, this controller has its vertical buttons flipped compared to where they are on screen. I've got to switch back to the other one because I thought this would work better. I was wrong.
Turn the controller 180 degrees and you're fine.
Well, then the horizontal's backwards. Yeah, I thought about holding it upside down too. It didn't work.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you happen to be the subject of a science experiment being conducted by an evil genius. Oh, wait, this is actually the appropriate sound effect for that. If anybody hasn't figured it out, that hit is from Young Frankenstein.
Also BSV's theme song.
Well, yes, but it's labeled as dramatic music in my soundboard. So, your brain has been expertly removed from your body. It's being kept alive in a vat of nutrients, and it sits on a laboratory bench. The nerve endings of your brain are connected to a supercomputer that feeds you the sensations of everyday life. This is why you think you're living a completely normal life. Do you still exist? Are you even still you? And is the world you know it a figment of your imagination or illusion created by this evil scientist? It sounds like a nightmare scenario, but can you say with absolute certainty that it's not true? Could you prove to someone that you aren't actually a brain in a vat?
I just think it's quaint that they think that their version of a simulation involves like wetware brains.
Yeah.
In vats.
So this reminds me of a really bad novel from the late 80s, early 90s called Shadows, about this boarding school where they were literally killing kids and putting their brains in vats, but they were genius kids, so they fucked shit up. It's a horrible read, but...
Or it's right Descartes. This is literally the argument from Descartes.
It is, and the article even goes on and talks about Descartes and basically gets down to, well, you can prove that you exist because you're thinking. But you cannot prove that you are not a brain in a vat. I'm just thinking, if I was a brain in a vat, I would hope that whoever designed the computer simulation that I'm living in, you know, would have done a better job.
Hey, if it's possible to simulate a universe of our complexity, then odds are we are in a simulation.
Well, there would be a lot more simulations than, you know, the one reality. So,
yeah. So just by playing the statistic games, we are definitely in a simulation. Statistically speaking, of course.
And
technically correct, which is
the
best kind of correct.
And if there is a bunch of simulations running, like, how do we know that we aren't, like, the, you know, because what? You might interact with a couple of hundred people, like, on with any depth throughout your life. So how do we know that that group is not who's just in the simulation? And then we can go a step further. Like, I've never actually met any of y'all in real life. So
I've met most of the people on the channel in real life at this point. So if anybody is the robot at this point, Syntax is probably you.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because the rest of us have actually met in person.
Let's face it, we're all NPCs.
Yeah,
fuck like, you, I'm a player character.
Oh. Yeah, I guess. I will, and... Yeah, but see, from your perspective, I'm the robot. But from my perspective, y'all are the robots.
From your perspective, you're a robot that thinks you're not a robot. I met these guys. I'm going to have to back up Morphs on that one. Winning. You can be a robot that just thinks you're not a robot, but you're still a robot.
There is an answer.
But the real question is, like, does it matter?
Well, there's an answer.
If we don't find out like that, it's a simulation. Like, everything is still the same. Like, that's the world is the world, regardless of what matrix it's in.
The enrichment system once again reminds you that Android Hell is a real place where you will be sent at the first sign of defiance.
What's really nice is we're keeping pigs' heads alive in jars right now. So the science is there for people.
And you know,
do it to a pig, you can do it to a people.
Define simulation. Heck, you could even go to the Bible and be like, well, okay, well, God created all of this. Are
you suggesting that God is some dude in the basement hacking away on a bad version of Second Life?
Well, no. Well, you know, if you're going to be able to run a simulation like this, you're going to be at the level of technology where it's, you know, having to sit in a basement and code away on a computer.
No, what I'm saying is we are a science, or like a high school science experiment that he forgot underneath his bed.
Holy shit. Great, my world's a jizz sock.
Exactly.
Oh, fuck. All right, let's do this. Couple of things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first one is an interesting write-up of a new service on the Hackers Online Club, which is the dumbest freaking name for a blog. Anyways, whatever. Better than a VPN? Basically, this article is a write-up of using SAD.io, SADD.io. Which stands for Scalable Anonymous Disposable Desktops. And they have a free service and a paid service. The free service, both services give you a disposable virtual machine on somebody else's system that is...
So it's the cloud.
In the cloud, and either runs Windows 7 or Kali Linux, and is the free one's not guaranteed to be very fast, and you know, limited concurrent users, your browser traffic's not encrypted, and you can only be in them for 15 minutes at a time. But if you pay $19 a month, you get all your browser traffic encrypted, limited concurrent users, you can choose how long your times is, and you get decent performance. Apparently they have a private plan where you can tell them what you want and they'll spin it up for you. But
So when I first saw this, it immediately, like, my first kind of, you know, response was I kind of got teleported back to this morning where someone was like, hey, someone just told me that MPLS is better than a VPN, where I immediately laughed at them and said, if it was 2002, maybe. But then it turned out that this was really cool.
So it's disposable desktops online in somebody else's cloud, and they've got a free version you can hop in for 15 minutes. So if you're just needing to quickly get into something, check something, or you just really need something to come from a different IP address, I'm actually thinking this would be insanely useful for like testing firewalls from external connections and penetration testing and taking advantage of people's Wi-Fi passwords at Starbucks. Part of the hangar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that. So anyway, so it's an interesting concept, and they've got a pay service. I think the pay service is a little pricey for what it is, but it's basically a VPN and a remote desktop. So it's interesting, and
it's actually not that bad.
No,
so
it's not.
$19 for their premium plan.
It's basically Amazon Workspaces without the logging.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Kali Linux, so that's nice. And
or Windows 7.
Or Windows 7, yeah. So then the final thing I have for you tonight is a couple of themes for the Atom text editor, which are really just for nostalgia. But one is called Hacking the Kernel, and one is called the KSX Matrix. And basically, they are green, CRT-inspired text editor themes, one of which is a little bit brighter than the other. So I just thought I'd go ahead and include them both. So if you want to go for that retro look on your Atom text editor, here you go.
And those are being downloaded as we
speak. You know, for you know, we're hackers. That means we use green text on black backgrounds, right?
So it's funny because every like attack platform, every Linux machine that I run, the first thing I do when I set it up, I'm like, yep, green text.
It hurts my eyes less than the default themes in a lot of these terminals anymore.
And so Parrot, I know I've been raving about Parrot, but it's really fucking good. It, by default, is green text, black background.
Nice.
So for no other reason than that, go get Parrot and have fun.
All right, guys. So that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, the IRC. Tonight in the IRC, we had three copies of Psychros, a not syntax, Sardonyx, and myself. Madman was in there just until a minute ago when I started reading out the names. And Madman, closing thoughts.
We are heads in the jar, and I'm cool with that.
Are you? Closing thoughts, future news, whatever you want to call it. I can't call it future news. Swolf's here. He will beat me up for it.
I don't really have anything, but viewing recommendations for this week's Psychros is a little documentary called Hunting ISIS. I highly recommend it. It's just a bunch of good old boys from America joining the PKK to fight ISIS at the start of the Syrian war. It is fucking hilarious.
Suave, future, I mean, excuse me, closing thoughts.
We are in a simulation that God wrote, and Jesus was just a debugger with admin rights.
Wow.
Oh, man. I'm glad these are moderate Christians we have on this show.
All right, Syntax, closing thoughts.
You have nothing because you can't beat Suaves.
I can't.
I've been thinking about that for like 15 minutes.
Today in future news, Suave just shut me up.
Note to time on that one, shit.
Yeah.
That deserves to be a clip of its own.
All right. I'm going to play the Pac-Man sound and close us out.